I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to, for me, a very special edition of Words on a Wire, because I am sitting in the studio with Moses, my good friend Moses Ayoub. We have been friends for many, many years now.
About 17 years, I think.
About 17 years. Please, about 17. Has it been that long?
Well, we moved back to El Paso in 2003 and met then, my wife and I.
Wow. And I remember when we met, I had just gotten back from spending the summer in Europe, and I was obsessed with drawing. I brought a notepad everywhere, and I drew everything, and I was really bad at it. But I was a member of the Bridge Centers for Contemporary Arts. I was a board member, and that's where I met you. You were sitting across the table from me the very first meeting I went to, and I had my notepad, and I drew your picture.
I remember that picture.
Yeah, and you probably felt, what is this creepy guy doing? He keeps looking at me and drawing me.
It had a great emphasis on this mole on my face.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember I used to go to this mall in Buenos Aires, and there was this guy who would draw people. He would sit on a table next to them, look at them, and draw, and it really creeped them out. But after he was done, he would pull the piece of paper off, and he would hand it to them. And most people would look at it because it was really bad. And they would look at it, and they would go, oh, thank you. And he didn't want money. He just went on to the next person.
That's awesome.
It was really weird. And he tried. One time I saw him in a cafe that I'd never seen him in before, and I was by myself. And he started drawing me, and it irritated the hell out of me. It really irritated me, and I don't know why. I don't know why. I tried to say, wait, no, I don't want it to be irritated, but I was so irritated by him.
I actually did the same thing when we lived in Mexico City just before we came to El Paso. I was drawing a lot at that time, and we had a favorite blues club in Mexico City, which is kind of an oddity to have a blues club in Mexico City, particularly because it was an Indian restaurant.
Oh, so no way. That's great.
So we had Indian food and blues music, and we loved going there, and I would take my sketch pad and draw people in the club and hand them the sketches, and I never got a really bad reaction there, although we did get one once.
Right. Oh, yeah, you and I got one once in Juarez when we were sketching the staff, and one of the staff members came up and says, hey, you know, they were pretty upset about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I learned my lesson.
That's interesting. I used to, at that point, I would get obsessed with drawing. I would always draw, and then I found out when you and I became friends, which was kind of a serendipitous way of meeting you outside of the bridge, but I won't go into that. You were drawing too, and then we would go draw together and draw together. At that point, you had just gotten back from Mexico City.
Right, right.
And so how long had you been drawing at that point?
I had been drawing for years at that point. I had sketch pads and, a lot of more formal drawings, but mainly sketch pads full of drawings. And it might be interesting if I told you about what I would call my first important drawing.
Uh-huh.
Now, by important, I'm saying important to me.
Right, right, yeah.
When I was a kid, my parents would have my siblings and I ride the bus downtown to go work in my aunt's grocery store, or my father owned a bar across the street, so we would go clean the bar and then go work in the grocery store. And so we saw all these incredible faces downtown, whether it was the people walking back and forth across the border or the merchants there. But one particular incident, these were in South El Paso. Mm-hmm. I would ride the bus to the downtown post office and walk from that post office all the way down Staten Street to the south side. And I would always walk past JCPenney's. And I saw one day a young man putting coins in a bubble gum machine that was right in front of the JCPenney's store. And I was either a preteen or a 13-year-old, and I thought, man, that would make a great drawing, that man buying bubble gum.
Wow.
And so now we're talking maybe a decade later. Uh-huh. I was in the working world at a very low level, very boring clerical job, accounting job in a big company downtown. And I looked out the window and I saw the JCPenney store. And I remembered that image in my mind of the man, young man buying bubble gum. And so I drew him on my green accounting paper.
Wow.
And that was, as an adult who could possibly be interested in art, that was the trigger, looking out the window and remembering that.
That's beautiful. And the bubblegum man was inside of you so long, wanting to get out,
absolutely,
wanting to be expressed, and finally.
And, you know, I don't think anyone's ever seen the drawing. It's in a box of with my sketch pads, but I consider that my starting point in drawing, seriously. I mean, we had art classes as a kid, but that's when I started drawing.
Well, you know, that's accessing the poetic imagination, because, I mean, you ended up expressing that image that struck you so much through drawing, but, you know, a poet would have done it in a poem, or a fiction writer would have, you know, had that in their fiction, or a musician would have found another way to express that gumball machine in the man.
Yeah,
but that's
for sure.
Yeah, and that's beautiful.
Well, thank you. I think my art is definitely builds from there, because what I've been doing the last two art shows I had are, you know, images of people. The first one was called Creative Paseños, Paseños meaning El Pasoans, passers through this valley we live in. And I did a whole bunch of paintings of writers, musicians, dancers, sculptors, painters.
And you did a solo show on that at the downtown library a
Correct.
Couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's right. I had a painting of you in it.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of other pretty well-known and not so well-known artists in El Paso.
Oh, and like when you were at the blues club in Mexico City, after you finished the painting, you gave it to me.
Yeah,
so
I did.
I have a painting of myself.
I did.
You know?
I don't know if I can use you as an example. I think this applies to all of the people I painted in that show. I tried to, if they were visual artists, quote them. By quote them, I mean put some element from their art in the painting. You were a writer, and I knew you pretty well, and I know that in your teaching and so forth, a big influence of yours is Borges. And so I was trying to think, what am I going to do with Daniel? And I actually started the painting as a painting of Borges, and then I painted your image on top of it. Now, you know, no one would know that. But it somehow got me motivated to get the feel for your image.
You know, I just want to say, Moses Ayoub is an El Paso native. You went to Austin High School. You graduated from UTEP with a degree in accounting. You went to school at night as you worked in the mailroom of some company, probably thinking about men and the gumballs. But you went on to a very successful career. I'm basically doing the introduction now. I got so involved in the conversation, I didn't even introduce you. And you started your own business, and then you just closed the business down, decided that you were going to paint full-time. And I don't mean paint houses. I mean, you started to become a full-time painter. And I've always admired that decision. It's having success. You had two private shows, one at the downtown library, and then another private show at the Social.
Jolo Gallery.
The Jolo Gallery in El Paso. And so you are a full-time painter.
Yeah.
that's what you do.
I learned a long time ago that if you want to be an artist or a musician or a writer, all you got to do is call yourself one.
No, but you got to do it too. You know, writers write. You can call yourself a writer all you want, but if you're not producing anything. And
that's
you
true.
Produce a lot. I've seen your studio.
Thank you.
And there are, I don't know how many paintings all around of people in El Paso, of artists, of just any image that strikes you. And I really like that about you, about your work, is that you just capture people and people doing things. Can you talk about why that's what you seem to be?
I've been attracted to, I call it people doing what they do. Mm-hmm. I've been attracted to that my whole life, and it really does go back to growing up here on the border, both sides of the border, the faces, the activities, the life, and all, you know, the setting. It's interesting to have a portrait, but it's even more interesting to have that in a place.
Right.
Some of the paintings I've done have been of people, like I've done a fry cook at Lucky's on Alameda, the Menudo place. I've done vendors at flea markets. I like to put people in places. I love El Paso. One of the paintings I did recently was of a musician in Juarez at a bus stop in front of San Lorenzo Church. And that, if you think about the bubblegum story, I saw JCPenney's through the window, and it prompted me to do the bubblegum guy. I was driving my daughter and son-in-law in Juarez because they were getting ready to go see the Pope, and we were sort of mapping out the route, and we passed by San Lorenzo Church in Juarez, and I saw this músico, this musician, carrying his guitar like an axe. He was walking across the street carrying his guitar, and I said, oh, my God, I hardly ever come to this part of Juarez. I want to come back and see if I can find him. And I went back the next day, and I found this guy, and I started taking all kinds of pictures of him, and he came up to me and said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm a painter, and I'm looking for interesting people to paint. And so I had him play a few songs for me, and he was really posing brilliantly. But what I really wanted was...
was him in the natural state. Yeah,
yeah, and I did get a picture of him walking across the street carrying his guitar like an axe.
Oh, my God. You know, this reminds me of a narrative that I encountered years and years ago. I think even when I was a teenager, I don't remember where I got it from, but there was this woman who was on the beach, and she saw this guy who was a native there, and he had scraggly hair, and you know, he just looked like this old sailor, and no shoes. And she says, you know, do you mind if I draw you? And he says, no, no, no. And so they arranged for a time. And then when he came back, he was all haircut and in a nice suit and everything.
It happens all the time, you know.
You know, you said something that really struck me when you talked about the portraits that you were doing, and that you did one of Borges first, and then you transpose my image over the Borges, and you said, well, nobody's going to notice. Nobody's going to notice. But you did it nonetheless. And it reminds me of this concept in fiction writing called the iceberg, that the reader only gets a tip of the iceberg, but there's so much depth to what goes on behind it. Do you do this in all of your paintings, like the painting of the músico in Juarez, for example?
Oh, yes. I don't know if it's as deep as an iceberg, but the painting of the músico is a created image, because I asked him to let me take pictures of him, and I got the picture I wanted, but it wasn't in the place I wanted. I wanted him across the street, so I combined the background and the foreground, and I kind of tried to incorporate a little bit of creativity. I just don't paint pictures. I mean, I rearrange things, and I used technology. I took a sculpture class at EPCC, and there's this older, I say, like he's about my age.
Oh, yeah, that is old. We are old guys, Moses.
There's this older sculpture teacher there named Ron Clark, and, you know, I imagined, you know, stereotypically, that he might want everybody to do everything just the way, old school way of doing things. And when students would use computers and technology and other tools, he said, we live today, and you should rely on what's available today. So what I'll do is I will take maybe a picture I took, and I'll put it in a different background, and I'll use computer images if I can't find them. But but always the best sources.
Now, when you say use computer images, do you mean to recreate, or that you put the images on the canvas itself?
No, I did a painting of the Feria in Juarez of some children on a bumper car, and the background was just a booth there with nothing interesting. So I moved the background. I got a good picture of them, and I got a picture of the Feria, and I just put them in front of the other background.
It seems like when you see a man in a gumball machine and it strikes you, or you see a músico in Juarez and it strikes you, or you see a cook at Lucky's Cafe and it strikes you, and you begin to think about it and you begin to create the image that you want, not necessarily an image that is true, photographically true, you know, like maybe a hyper-realist might, you know, insist on doing. You're responding to it emotionally. You're responding to it intellectually, spiritually, even if you'd like. You're responding to it in such a, you know, fundamentally personal way that you are creating the meaning. And so by putting these things together, you are aware that you're creating the meaning.
Yes, I definitely, every painting I do, I try to think, where's the story in this? Right. It may not be apparent once the painting's done to the viewer, but I did a portrait of my wife, and that's a hard subject.
I bet. Yeah. What did you put underneath your wife? You know, like, what was the first person that you painted?
We were at this pub on Pershing Street, and I was talking about, I need to do a painting of you, and I was a little stuck because we're so close. Uh-huh. And she started doing Tai Chi moves, and she picked her hands up in the air, all five fingers on both hands open near her head. And I said, stop right there. And I took that picture. And that, to me, represented her because she's so open to the universe. And that was a Tai Chi move. And it was just beautiful the way the picture came out. Uh-huh. So that's I put that. You might see it as a woman with her hands up, but to me, it's her reliance on Eastern philosophy and Tai Chi to help her mood and her view of the world.
I'm talking to painter, artist, community activist Moses Ayoub, but we're talking about his paintings. And you mentioned that grocery store, your aunt's grocery store, which was downtown El Paso, right across the street from your dad's bar.
Yeah.
Which you used to clean. And can we go back into that grocery store, and can we kind of like walk the aisles of the grocery store, and what do we see?
A lot of Uncle Willie's old merchandise that didn't sell very well.
Who's Uncle Willie?
Well, my grandfather owned this building on South Stanton, the family ran it. They lived upstairs, and they sold groceries downstairs. And Uncle Willie, he was supposed to, oh, my God, I don't know if I'm going to say this on the radio. He was a very bright man, and he decided he was going to modernize and get all of this sort of five-and-dime merchandise at the time. You know, they had five-and-dime stores, and he bought tons and tons of it, and it took up like 75% of the store. And it didn't sell very well.
Oh, my God, but what colors and shapes and...
There were toys and things from many years before, maybe the 20s, 30s, and 40s in these cases, and they'd sell them one or two at a time.
Wow.
And try to get full price for everything. And so it was all sorts of oddities there. And, of course, there was the case in the front of the store that was full of candies. And, you know, being a child, we occasionally helped ourselves to the candies, and we usually got caught. Part of what we also did there was sell snow cones. Uh-huh. Our job as the kids were to run the snow cone business. And so we'd have all this syrup and grind the ice, and there were, I mean, we're talking probably around late 60s. We really still got big blocks of ice that we broke up with an ice pick and ground the ice. And also the front of the store was a fruit stand. So that's how I learned to speak Spanish. I learned how to say how much, bananas were or cantaloupes. And that's where I learned Spanish.
Wow.
That, as we said, led to this idea of painting people.
Right, right. Yeah. Can we get back to that moment that you decided you were going to retire?
Yeah.
And retirement means something different for an artist than it does for, I think, most people. Because I think most people think of retirement, oh, I don't have to work. But an artist more thinks of retirement as an opportunity to work more.
Right? That's right.
Because you get to do the work that you really, you know, need to do. And so once you quit and it was all over and you liquidated all your furniture and gave severance pay to those who worked for you and closed all the books, what was it like? How did it feel? And what did you work on first?
The first thing I had on my things to do list after retirement was have an art show. Well,
an art show.
Have a show, because I'd already been painting.
Right.
I wanted to see if I could put myself out there and have a real show.
Oh, that's like a writer saying I was going to write a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wanted your first show.
Yeah. And strangely, It was like a month after retirement. I already had enough paintings. I finished three or four of them for the show, but I already had enough paintings, and I had my art show. Wow. And my goal, and during that first couple of years of retirement, I haven't been retired that long, but my first couple of years was to paint every day, and I did. I painted every day, and I might paint for half an hour. I might paint for 2 hours. It's not an 8-hour thing. I can't do it eight hours, but I painted every day.
Well, you know, when you're an artist, painting, writing, or whatever it is you're doing, you know, music is not just, you know, the act of, you know, doing the technical thing. For writers, I call it butt time. It's not just butt time when you're sitting on your butt writing on your computer or writing on your notepad. It's also walking, going back to Juarez to see the músico. It's almost, you know, and so it seems like, do you keep your day unstructured so that you allow yourself this kind of labyrinth of time to unfold the way it wants?
That's very important to me. And I do want to, we've mentioned a couple of times the músico, and to me, I'd like to talk about the relationship of music to my art.
Mm-hmm.
Besides painting a lot of musicians, I'm 66 years old, which is a little bit old to try to learn a musical instrument,
right.
But I just started trying to learn the guitar, and I've been working at it now for about a year,
mm-hmm.
And I'm learning things that 12-year-old kid who wants to be a rock star already knows.
Right, right.
I know that I'm learning how to make an A chord on a guitar. You push three strings down with three fingers. One thing that as I've started this process and still continuing my painting is I'm wanting to relate music to my painting.
Uh-huh.
I took a drawing class at UTEP with Hector Romero. He's an excellent drawing teacher. And he had us draw music. He played some jazz music and said, mm-hmm. draw that. That was a wonderful exercise.
Right.
I am more of a person who, as we talked about, represents people and environments and settings. And so when I've been toying with the guitar, trying to learn music, I've learned that to play an A chord on a guitar, it's three fingers in one position. To play A minor, you move one of the three fingers and it becomes a minor chord.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with D and D minor and most of the minor keys. But the entire meaning changes.
Right.
When you play a song in a minor key versus a major key. And I've been studying a lot of songs in a minor key,
uh-huh.
on the guitar. And I've been trying to find ways to incorporate the idea of a minor key in my paintings. I'm striving to have my next art show to be called Paintings in a Minor Key.
And have you got any images yet that fit into?
Painting I'm working on now, I think, fits into it. I mean, it's a beautiful waitress who works at a burger place here in El Paso, and she's handing me or the viewer a hamburger. But it's got a lot of browns, and it's got a different position, and it has a little bit of a unconventional representation. And I'm trying to see, is this something I can work into a series?
Well, unconventional representation, meaning?
The composition is kind of foreshortened. In other words, you have a hamburger in front and her head in the back, and it's sort of a linear perspective going upwards, and it's in a bar, and there's a lot of reflected light in there.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm not sure I'm there yet. It's a very challenging painting.
So it's like you're not looking at it like with, you know, regular two eyes under regular lighting. You're looking at it from a perspective that is, you know, I guess influenced by the space, the perspective, and the lights, and all those things, and so it's making it seem, I wouldn't say surreal, but it's making it seem somehow
a little bit different, like an A and an A minor, you know.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that.
You know, I remember seeing this series of paintings. I forget where or when, some city that had a bunch of art galleries, and there was this. The series of paintings of these women with very elongated bodies and almost like rubber arms, and,
yeah.
And you know, they were just, you know, all over the canvas, and they were, you know, kind of 1920s beautiful. And is the shape of the human body different in this series than it is in your Pasenio series? Are the shapes different, or are they still the same kind of
proportions? I would say that they are viewed differently.
Right.
In other words, if you had a hand right in front of your eyes, it would dominate what you see. So
Okay. The
views will be different. I'm not deliberately trying to change the human form. A lot of people do that. It's
right. Great
art, but...
Okay, I see, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily that it's a non-human perspective. It's just a human perspective from a particular angle.
Yes.
That's interesting. Can't wait to see that. And Moses Ayoub, you have been living in El Paso most of your life. I know you lived for a while in Houston and other parts of Texas, I think even California. And then you took a job in Mexico City and worked there for how many years?
2.5 years.
Can you talk a little bit about creativity or inspiration in El Paso vis-a-vis Mexico City?
Sure. Mexico City is an incredible city. It's one of the most important cities in the world. Everything you can imagine is there, good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
El Paso is a phenomenal place to live, to be creative, because we have all this color and richness, and you can really get to it. You can move around. You can find beautiful things. You can go to public places and see the life here, and it's very influenced by the Mexican culture,
right.
which makes it a whole lot richer. I think I'm very completely influenced by living in El Paso. Mexico opened my mind because I started painting in Mexico. My wife, Carolyn, signed me up for a painting class in Mexico. And once that happened, it opened a tremendous door to me. But when we came back to El Paso, it gave me all the subject matter. I was working in a very high-stress job that involved this analytical thinking, the left brain, and my wife signed me up for this painting class, and we met this great painter there named Katie Estrella.
And, oh, yeah, I remember her.
Yeah.
She was at a party at your house one time.
That's right. She's in Tucson now.
She had a sketch pad with charcoals, and she took like 5 minutes and sketched me, and it was amazing. It looked just like
it. She's brilliant.
Oh, my God, how did that happen?
She's brilliant. She was an American who moved to Mexico City for quite a long time, and then she just moved back in her later years to Tucson. So
right.
she'd have a little more comfort in the U.S., which worked out for her.
So where can people go to view some of your paintings? Do you have a website or some place they can? Are you on?
I have a Facebook page. They can see at least 30 of my paintings right on Facebook. Jolo Gallery still has a few of them. If you go to JoloGallery.com, Jolo is XOLO. He saved a lot of the paintings from that show there. Those are two places. If you know me, you can call me.
Okay, and here's his cell phone number right now. So how long do you think it's going to take you to get all these minor paintings together?
At least a year, probably more.
Wow. And are you working on them every day?
Yeah. I guess you asked, or I started by talking about this bubble gum thing, looking out the window that I saw this building and I drew it. And then when I was in Juarez with my daughter, I looked out the window and I saw the músico. I have to just keep looking out windows and finding stuff, and I'm going to find them.
Right.
And I do that a lot in El Paso. And most of this minor key stuff is going to probably be at night.
Do you look for them, or do you just walk around and make yourself available?
A little bit of both. Yeah. I feel like it's the most creative things sometimes happen by accident, but you just can't do nothing. You got to do it one step at a time, and you just have to try to do it.
Well, you know, let's get back to the retirement thing, because this is one of the things that I really admire, like I said, about you, that you gave everything to retire, and that your retirement really is full-time painting in the sense that you don't have an agenda or a schedule. got to do this and that, except for your exercise, which, you know, is fundamental to do. But you know, this freeing up of your schedule. What is a typical Moses Ayoub day like? Bring us starting from the morning when you wake up.
Well, this goes pretty much today. Let me say that more clearly. I'll give you an example today, but this changes over time because life changes.
Right.
I get up. I do exercise. I will try to do two creative activities, meaning paint and work with the guitar.
Uh-huh.
And so that combination is influencing my painting.
Right.
Right now, as I said, I'm toying with these songs in the minor key. For somebody who's interested in that, the song Summertime is in the minor key. The song Buddy Can You
Summertime.
Yeah, that's a minor key. And Buddy Can You Spare a Dime is in the minor key. And a number of other ones. So I'm learning those songs, and then I go paint my painting. So that's my day. I might do that in reverse order because my studio is in the basement, and I'll do the painting in the morning and play the guitar later in the day. I also have, you know, family obligations and a few little business things I have to do. Even though I'm retired, there's things I have to do with investments and family. And I babysit my grandson once in a while spend time with my wife. And, you know, it's a retirement life.
And it sounds good. A lot of people go crazy when they retire, you know. But like I said, when you're an artist, just the time to take a walk.
I never have nothing to do.
Yeah, and it's like when you have a busy schedule, you know, you got a career going, and then you also have those other things, family, and all these obligations, and you're trying to create art. You know, that's where it really gets challenging. And the dream is to be able to do that, to be able to say, okay. You know, how am I going to spend today? What am I going to do with today?
Yeah.
What am I going to do with it? Do you one of the things that I'm learning is to be able to be completely where I'm at without worrying about schedules, without worrying about having to be here or having to be there, but just to be where I'm at and to.
That is very important to me. It doesn't always succeed because the world wants you places. Even retired, my wife likes to know what time we're going to do something.
Right, right, yeah. You see, you're not dropping out of humanity altogether, living on a deserted island.
But definitely, I love being able to go downstairs and paint when I want to and play the music when I want to and you know, take a walk when I want to. It's fun.
Yeah, you know, do you remember we were friends already, and I sold the novel and was able to take a year off from teaching. So UTEP was kind enough to let me have a year unpaid, but it was a year nonetheless. And I decided I was going to move to Buenos Aires. And so I went to Buenos Aires. I thought I'd be there for a year. But there were circumstances with my dog that called me home after 4 months. And then I was able to go back later. But anyway, the thing is that during that time in Buenos Aires, that I had absolutely nowhere I needed to be, and not even family obligations because I went by myself. And, you know, once a day I would go to an internet cafe because this was before wireless was in all the apartments that I rented. There was no Airbnb back then. It was renting off some other website. But man, it was such a beautiful experience that within a month, I was so engrossed in the project that I was working on, which was a novel, that I couldn't separate anymore what I saw in the city, in the landscape, what I observed, and what I was working on. They came together so that anytime for example, one time I saw this father and his daughter, and they were on a bicycle, and she was on the handlebars. And he was going really fast, and Buenos Aires is an incredibly busy city. And he was going, and he was swerving in and out, and she was just there. She wasn't like, oh, my God. She wasn't worried. She was just like total at peace, not saying anything, just kind of feeling the. And I thought, man, what trust. And I was working on a novel about a dad and a mother and a daughter. So I knew that was part of the novel. I imagine that things like that can happen to you every single day. And that, right? I mean,
Definitely. But you need to be out. You need to be out and about.
Yeah, you can't stay home and watch TV.
Right.
You can't
That's
stay
right.
home and.
That's
yeah.
right. And El Paso can be hot and it can be windy, but you got to find those opportunities to get out and experience things. And maybe that's also why I've somewhat gravitated for the next show to be at night. The minor key is going to be images at night.
Oh, so you get out at night too.
Yeah.
What do you do at night, Moses?
Well, go to confession and then
you go to church meeting. No, that's really interesting. But you're right. You have to get out. I think it's Flannery O'Connor who said something like, those who refuse to participate in any kind of experience are going to be led to despair or something like that, right? The road to despair. You're going to be in despair if you refuse to participate in experience. And that's one of the things that artists understand, is that it's not only about being in the moment, but it's about experience, to being able to go out of your front door, go out of your mind, to leave your mind behind, which is why I think it's important. A lot of artists meditate so they can control their thoughts, but to be able to be out in the landscape and let the landscape interact with your creativity. You can't, you're not going to do it just staying home all the time.
Yeah, I think you can stimulate your creativity most anywhere. I just thought of a painting talking to you right now.
Your painting idea just came to you.
Right.
Oh, cool. A story idea came to me. What's your painting idea?
Okay. When you came back from Argentina because of your dog, we were friends at that time.
Right. My dog, Felix.
Yeah, Felix.
Rest in peace. I love that fella.
You told me you were coming back, and I said, well, you needed to stay someplace for a few days till you got another place, and you had Felix. And so I said, well, stay in our basement. And you stayed with us for 3 or 4 days in our basement.
And you didn't lock me in a cold basement with supplies. There was an actual room, insulated.
So we had my sister and three brothers, and I had the five kids. Had a family meeting. It was kind of a tough time. It was a difficult time. We had to talk about some issues concerning our parents' health and whatnot. And I invited them to my house. And when we were in the middle of this very serious meeting, you came up the stairs followed by Felix, this very huge dog.
Big black dog, yeah. He was...
And my mother said, my sister, Norma, said, there's a man in your dog. A man and a dog in your basement. And I thought, oh, there's a painting. Daniel and Phoenix coming out of the basement.
Yeah, that was an incredible time. And I'm very fortunate to be a professor because I get summers off. And I usually would go someplace during the summer, Europe or Latin America or something, spend the whole summer there. And that living in the moment, that being available for to interact with beauty, with experience, and oftentimes we're not available. When we go to a store and we're waiting in line, we're so impatient and we're looking at our phones, or we're like getting angry, or we're thinking, like how we would like to torture the person in front of us who's taking too long. I mean, we're not available. We're not there. And one of the things an artist needs to do is develop that ability to be there. One of the things that I like to do, like when I go to get, I drink iced tea a lot, and I'll go to McDonald's because you can get a big one for $1, And but I don't go through the drive-thru. I like to stop, and I like to get out, and I like to interact with people, and I like to watch. And if my wife sends me to Walmart, I don't go, oh, there's going to be a lot of people there. I just go, and I experience, and it opens up so much to me. And I think the key for an artist, what you're doing, is to take that ability that we have when we travel to foreign countries or foreign cities to just observe and be in the moment and bring that home.
You're completely right. And I have a literal example of that thing you just mentioned where you're looking at your phone in the grocery line. I actually painted people in a grocery line.
Right.
I mean, to me, that was very interesting. It was very colorful. It was very rich. It was a set in Food City on Alameda Street, and there was a couple with a basket full of groceries, and it was a tough painting to do, but I really enjoyed it, and it meant something to me. And I think there was a story there. There was respect for them and the life here in El Paso on the border.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't mean to be like a curmudgeon and say, oh, these young people on their phones all the time, because you don't never know what they're doing. They could be on their phone reading War and Peace, you know, and they're on page 500 and they're so absorbed in the novel. So I don't judge them, for being on their devices. But I really try to not use my device when I'm walking through a store or when I'm walking in a public place, because I want to be available. There's this mystic concept that I think I first encountered in Kabbalah, and it's the idea that when God calls Abraham, you know, he says, Abraham, where are you? Abraham answers in Hebrew, of course, you know, Heyani. And I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it correctly, but Heyani, I am here. And that this appears throughout, you know, the texts, the spiritual texts, a lot. God calls and you say, Heyani. And if you're not saying Heyani, if you're not I'm here, then you're not available for God, which for us is access to imagination and access to that creative source.
Yeah, it's always
about being here.
Yeah, it's about being here. I see it similarly, but I think you need to be open to it. And that's I guess that's
yeah,
the same
we're saying
thing.
The same thing. Yeah, that's one way of saying it, to be open to being open to it.
Yeah,
and you know, there's one thing that I you know think that you know. Being an artist in some ways, and this might sound a little woo-woo or a little corny, but I don't care because I truly believe that being an artist is, it's such a sacred thing that we do, because it's in many ways, it's seeking to understand what it is to be human.
Oh, definitely.
And that's a question I've been playing with. What is it to be human? You know, what is it to be human?
I think that's important. And in my paintings, I hope that I am painting people with respect and appreciation for who they are. One of my recent paintings, which has nothing to do with El Paso, is set in Houston. I had lived in Houston a couple of years, and I felt very bad when Hurricane Harvey hit the city, and I thought, well, you know, I'm going to try to help. And so I got the Red Cross to sign me up as a volunteer, and I went and helped in one of the hurricane shelters. And there was a lady there, a beautiful lady. She was about my age. She was had been evacuated from South Texas, from Victoria, Texas, and she was there with her son. And she was wearing a tiara. Uh-huh. She was in a shelter wearing a tiara. And her son, who would look after her, had this bag with three dolls, three triplets, I called them. And I would say hello to her every morning. And I became fond of her. And I did this painting of her. We need to wrap. I did this painting of her. But not in the shelter where I found her. I did this painting of her coming out of the hurricane with her possessions, which was this tiara and her three dolls. And I just thought, God, that humanity is so important. This lady is here in the shelter, but she's a human. And she, maybe the fact that she has dolls and tiaras might seem odd to people, but it's so beautiful.
You know, it sounds like you create these works of art and you present these people with compassion, and you want to evoke compassion.
I hope so, yeah.
Because that's beautiful, yeah. You know, if you were flooded out of your home and you could take two things, would it be a tiara and three dolls?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it really says something about her and makes us love her.
Yeah.
It makes us, yeah, and this idea about, you know, being human, and I don't have an answer either. You know, I mean, who knows? That's what we're all doing. We're all, artistic development is the same as developing as a human being. You know, so I don't know what it is to be human. I have ideas, but one of the things that I'm thinking is it's the ability to use your consciousness to create a reality that you carry with inside of you, your own internal reality, because we all filter reality differently. And to be human is to have your own reality inside of you that interacts with and influences exterior reality. Because none of us can carry a tiara or three dolls through the water without touching other people, you know, without moving the water. And the water moves and slaps against the thighs of others. And that causes this whole chain of movement. But that our consciousness not only creates our inner reality, but it also, you know, influences the outer reality. And that's certainly, I don't know, I'm kind of going on up this for a while. But that's what I think of when I think of your painting and what you're trying to do.
That, well, thank you.
I don't know. Did that make sense? I'd like to thank my guest Moses Ayu. Before we go, Moses, I need to ask you very quickly, what painting are you going to do next?
It's going to be called Lucky Boy.
Do you want to tell us about it? Or?
Well, it's the one I'm working on right now. I'm working on two paintings right now. Lucky Boy, which is a woman handing me a hamburger.
Okay, that's the one.
And the other one is going to be called Desert Kiss. Desert Kiss is another woman standing in front of a house in central El Paso that has a painting someone else's painting of the rock group Kiss. So those are the two paintings I'm working on.
Wow. Well, please let us know. Get a website. But for now, you can find him on Facebook.
Facebook.
Your account is, you can see some of his paintings and send him a message. Moses Ayub, thank you so much for joining me on Words on a Wire.
It was a pleasure.
I'm Daniel Chacon. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week.